Hello and welcome, Transformation Talk Radio listeners and podcast listeners everywhere. My name is Ellen Stewart, and I am the pushy broad from the Bronx.
She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York. Follow her voice, as straight talk as nice. She's the pushy broad from the Bronx, oh yeah. Don't be surprised if you wanna listen twice. Make decisions, find the right choice. Know yourself better, find your own voice. It's okay if you need help today, cause everybody needs a little push. From the pushy broad from the Bronx, New York.
This weekly show, Everybody Needs a Little Push, with Ellen Stewart, the pushy broad from the Bronx, will be aired every Wednesdays on Transformation Talk Radio and podcast stations everywhere at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. I am delighted to bring you my weekly podcast program, which I hope will inspire you, coach you,
sometimes make you laugh,
and give you the push moment you need to move forward. And I'm going to do it the pushy Broadway. Straight up. No BS, easy, quick, with answers, suggestions, and directions that will give you a coaching experience that will be part cheerleader and part drill sergeant. Because everybody needs a little push from time to time. And here comes yours.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Everybody needs a little push.
Everybody, 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 everybody needs a little push.
Confidence is a feeling or belief that one can rely on someone or something. It becomes a firm trust. It is a state of feeling when you are certain about the truth of something. It's a feeling of self-assurance arising from one's appreciation of one's own abilities or qualities. Self-confidence, self-assurance goes hand in hand with self-reliance and a sense of good self-esteem. What does it feel like to be confident of one's own powers and one's reliance on themselves? What does it feel like to be confident in one's own abilities and trusting of your own instincts? What does it feel like to have faith and belief in yourself to do the right thing, be responsible for your own success, and most of all, know with that certainty that you had the courage to do it? What does it feel like to be in a state of being certain? What does it feel like to be in a relationship of trust and intimacy with yourself? What does it feel like to rely on your own discretion? Now imagine that all of those feelings are stripped away. You suddenly no longer have any confidence in yourself. You have lost faith and trust in everything you used to hold dear about you. It's as if the rug has been pulled out from under you. You are now standing on shaky ground, in your own environment and in your own surroundings. You have gone from a woman of certainty, assuredness, and conviction to a woman of doubt and uncertainty, almost in the blink of an eye. And you have done so in a way that has completely rocked your world. And these shattering feelings are a direct result of your experiences, by your current events, by situations that have happened to you beyond your control. You are flying high like a bird on a wing, and all of a sudden, you are shot down and plummeting towards the earth. What is it like when you're at the pinnacle of self-confidence and then you're in the depths of despair and your confidence is lost? That story, that situation, is what this episode is all about. Confidence lost, confidence found.
I have author Kate McGinnis, whose brand new book,
Confidence, Lost Confidence, Found, How to Reclaim the Unstoppable You, was published in digital and print format on January 14th at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and more. Kate is with us in the studio today, and she's going to give us her very exciting story on how she got to write this book, a little bit about her background, and some really helpful information for us as how to reclaim our confidence, especially during this time in our lives. Welcome, Kate McInnes.
Thanks very much, Ellen. I'm excited to be here today.
Thank you so much. Kate, you have a very interesting background. Let us know what led up to this marvelous book.
Well, what led up to this marvelous book, and I thank you for calling it that, as the title says, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found. And I thought I had lots of confidence. I had won a whole lot of gold stars over my life, been a very successful lawyer, corporate executive, and suddenly I was fired.
That must have been quite terrifying. And from what you say, quite unexpected as well. I was fired myself, and I know that we can go on a roller coaster of emotions.
Well, it really was. And I had my whole identity invested in being a high-achieving women lawyer. Boy, that was me. I was one of the best-known women lawyers in Los Angeles at the time. And to have this termination come out of the blue really knocked the wind out of me. Took a long time to negotiate a severance package, but eventually we did. And my attorney thought he was being very clever because he asked to have it come in annual installments, which would have been clever, but for the fact that the company paying me went bankrupt.
I see. So you didn't negotiate a lump sum. You negotiated a settlement over the course of time. And now you're in a situation where the company went bankrupt. So everything that was owed you was gone.
Gone.
Gone. How long ago was this?
Oh, my gosh. That was, 2008. How many people had big losses in 2008?
Oh, yes. Tremendous losses. There's no question. So you said the firing came out of the blue. Did they develop a reason for it? Or were you basically an employee at will, which means they could fire you at will?
Essentially, I was a corporate executive. And, as you probably know, with the press about non-disclosure agreements, I can't give you chapter and verse as to why it happened. But let me simply say, I was the head lawyer for the company. And sometimes, in order to comply with the law, the head lawyer has to say, no, you can't do that. No, you shouldn't do that. And that answer is not always well received by other people in the corporation.
I understand. So it's not only, unfortunately, in the wide world of corporate, it's not only what's happening, but it's corporate politics that one has to deal with. And we've all been there because I have suffered the same thing for different reasons, and certainly not in the legal field, but in other areas of my life where once or twice in my life, I never thought as a vice president of the company, I would be fired. And there you are saying, oh my God, how did this happen to me, right?
Absolutely. I mean, and the thing that made it just a little bit worse was I had commuted with the man I was married to at the time. We both worked in downtown LA. So these two guys come in my office. They say, we're putting out a press release before the market opens on Wednesday. You describe what your cover story is. You know, you're not going to be able to get in your office after the end of the day today. So I called the man I was married to and said, I've just been fired. Would you come pick me up? I want to go home. And he said, oh, don't joke. And I said, no, I'm not joking. It really happened. He says, oh, come on, don't joke. So I finally had to give him the details of who it was. And finally, the third time, he agreed to come get me. So that kind of underscores how totally unexpected it was.
Oh my goodness. And of course, this was a little about 12 years ago. And you really didn't have a backup plan because this caught you quite by surprise. So when you left, how long do you think it took you to kind of recover from this initial situation, this initial shock?
Well, it's interesting because as I made a reference to collecting gold stars, I think, and that was how I had built up confidence over all the years prior to being fired. And one of the gold stars was that my law school had named me as the alumni of the year. And there was this big event coming up where I was going to be honored. And it was about 6 weeks after I was fired.
Oh, so imagine that. You're honored for being, what, attorney of the year or something like that. And there you are out of work.
Yep. And you have to, you know, and oh, the event had been planned. They'd sold tickets. I had to go and accept the plaque. And then what am I going to say?
What did you say?
They were all lawyers. So I said, you all understand that I can't tell you why I was fired, but what I will tell you, and then I gave the name of the professor who had been our legal ethics teacher. And so I said, I can't tell you why I was fired, but I will say that Dean Weckstein would be very proud of me.
Ah, all right. So that was 6 weeks later.
And then it was quite hard. I ended up, really, it kind of cast a gray pall over everything in my life. I ended up divorcing the man I was married to at the time. And I had a lot of people say to me, oh, Katie, you're such a good lawyer. You know, what are you going to do now? And I was called by headhunters saying, oh, well, this company is looking for a general counsel. Do you want to come interview that company? And I decided I really didn't want to be subject to the whims of another group of men, frankly.
Okay. So was this the first time in your life that you were fired?
Oh, yes.
Ah. Right. Okay, so it was really an emotional ride for you because, as you said, your emotional situation, the core of your being, your confidence was tied to your job, which is a very male thing to begin with. I mean, but your confidence was tied to your job, and then you're in a situation where you're not there, so now you're struggling emotionally.
So I was really feeling quite depressed. I was really, I withdrew from people. I had been on the board of several nonprofit corporations, social support agencies, those kind of things. And I called the executive directors and I said, well, I have to resign from the board because I got fired and I'm not the person you thought I was. To a person, they all said, no, that doesn't matter to us. We want you on the board because you have good judgment. But I wasn't willing to hear that at the time. And so I went through some ways to build my confidence. It was a gradual process. So I said, no, don't want to be a lawyer anymore. And I had always wanted to write. So I studied writing. I went to University of Southern California, then went to UCLA, and I'd always wanted to learn how to ride a horse. When I was growing up, I'd always wanted that, but my parents didn't have enough money to do that. So it was, oh, okay. So I took horseback riding lessons and I took writing lessons, which sometimes can be confusing when you say writing and riding.
Writing, yes, I understand. Well, look, this show, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, Everybody Needs a Little Push, talks about our push moments, our push moments, the pivotal moments in our lives that push us forward in a totally different direction. And would you say that this situation, being fired in this situation, was a pivotal push moment for you?
It certainly was when you add to that losing my severance. Because I took being fired. I started to recover from that. I started to write. I was doing some good writing. And I bought a ranch in California wine country. It was near where my son was in boarding school. So, you know, that was salve on the wound. I was getting better, you know, feeling better. And then kabam, the company went bankrupt. And that double hit. Losing the job, losing the severance, losing my ranch, Even had to leave behind my horse.
Oh my. About how long after you began your severance did the company go bankrupt?
It actually lasted quite a while. I had a pretty good ride, Alan. It was about 10 years.
Oh, wow. You did.
I did have a good ride. I wrote a novel during that time, wrote a novel for women on how to fight sexual harassment and discrimination.
Really? What's the name of that novel?
It's called Terminal Ambition. And it's actually a legal thriller. I set it in a law firm to have one woman partner fighting for the better treatment of women inside the law firm. Wow. So like my book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found, I wrote it for women. I guess I'm a second generation feminist.
Yes, I am as well, a second generation feminist.
I will have more with Kate McGinnis when we return. We'll be right back.
Are you ready to transform and empower your life by changing the way you think, feel, and act? Then it's time to schedule a coaching call appointment with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified empowerment coach and recovery coach. My style of coaching is part cheerleader and part drill sergeant, always in your corner and at the same time giving you the push you need to truly move forward and exactly what you need to take command of your life. If you are ready for the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, I am ready for you. Visit my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says one-on-one coaching. Make an appointment today.
Welcome back to Pushy Broad from the Bronx. Everybody needs a little push. I'm Ellen Stewart. I'm here with my special guest, Kate McGinnis, and her brand new book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found, How to Reclaim the Unstoppable You, which was published in digital and print format on January 14th, 2020, and is now available at Amazon, Barnes & Nobles, and wherever books are sold. We are talking about Kate's inspiration for this book, based on her life, where she went from a flourishing, high-flying Los Angeles lawyer to existing in exile in an Iowa farm town. Her surprise termination from a dream job as an attorney started a downward spiral that grew steeper when the company paying her severance went bankrupt. The devastation and humiliation of being fired, the eventual financial losses that incurred, compounded with the pain of divorce that followed, deepened the dive into depression and lack of confidence. We're here talking about her journey back.
Okay, so here you are, an attorney, you get fired, you you decide that you want to do something alternatively, so that you look into writing and you look into doing something wonderful with your life, like horseback riding. You completely shed old skin, including a husband, right?
Yes, you do exactly.
A complete 180. And then severance has stopped. The company goes bankrupt. What is Kate's next move?
Well, one, as you say, I shed the husband I was married to, who didn't believe that I had been fired or wouldn't come pick me up. So I'm trying to really reform my life. What's going on? What matters to me? And I wanted to learn to write. And I read a column by Alice Walker in the New York Times on writers and writing. And she found, she became much more creative after she studied transcendental meditation. So I signed up to study transcendental meditation. And darn if the teacher wasn't this very handsome single guy.
Does that become the second chapter in Kate McGinnis's love life?
At least.
Okay. Oh, open the door to a new romance?
Open the door to a new romance. So by the time I had moved to the ranch with my horse, was writing, and lost the severance, and my meditation teacher was there with me. And so, well, what are we going to do? And I really have no family but for my son, who was at that point had graduated from boarding school. He was going to college And so it's, where in the world should I go? You know, how much money will I get out of the bankruptcy? Certainly it took 4 years for that question to be answered. And the answer was pennies on the dollar.
Of course.
So where should I go? And my meditation teacher suggested we go to Fairfield, Iowa. I don't know if you know anything about transcendental meditation, but it turns out that the center of transcendental meditation in the U.S. is in this small town in Iowa, where there was a university that Maharishi Mahesh Yogi bought. You might recognize that name.
I do.
And so my meditation teacher had spent a lot of time in that town. And so he said, oh, well, he had a lot of friends there. Everything was cheaper in Iowa. So what the heck? I moved to Fairfield, Iowa.
And when was that approximately?
That was 2012. It took me a year and a half to sell my ranch, which was pretty painful.
Wow. Okay. So, but this time, you know, so again, you had to do another change. You had to experience another reinvention of Kate McGinnis.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of courage and confidence to begin with. So you're able to rise above a few things because you're able to overcome some things. And you did have the support at that time of someone that cared about you and wanted to do things with you. So here you are. From there, and now you find yourself in Iowa, right? Did you say Iowa?
Iowa, that's right. Yes.
And from there, how did it lead up to deciding to write this book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found?
So I decided that Iowa is not a good fit for me. The man that I was living with, my meditation teacher, really preferred to meditate 7 hours, literally 7 hours a day.
Oh, gee.
To being with me. So it was a question of, well, what next? Didn't know how much money I would get out of the bankruptcy. It was running down my own retirement savings. And so I thought, well, you know, there are a whole lot of unhappy women lawyers out there. So I decided to train to be an executive coach with the goal of working with women lawyers. And now I only work with women, lawyers and non-lawyers, but my training to be a coach really caused me to learn a whole lot about psychology and neuroscience. And I was so lucky that the coaching school I enrolled in had a program where you had to be coached by one of their master coaches. So you could see what it was like to be coached well. So I was assigned to a wonderful woman who's actually, she's one of the two people the book is dedicated to. And she really helped me find my way.
Wonderful. Well, there are some really wonderful things you cover in this book. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the highlights here. And of course, the book is centered around confidence and how you define confidence. So I want to talk a little bit about how you feel you can help someone tell if they lack confidence.
Sure. There are lots of, there are a number of ways confidence or lack of confidence shows up in a number of ways in terms of how we think, how we behave. So for example, people who are get to be very defensive about criticism, people who don't like to ask for what they want, that they feel themselves uncomfortable doing that. If they hesitate when they're asked to make simple decisions, if they fail to set ambitious goals, those are all kinds of behaviors that could be symptomatic of a lack of confidence. And certainly it affects us emotionally too. People who lack confidence tend to be quite anxious. You can think of anxiety as the opposite of confidence. So people who lack confidence tend to be anxious. They tend to be depressed. They tend to be defensive. They tend to worry a lot. No, their minds seize on problems and just spin and spin and spin. And they blame themselves when things don't go smoothly. And the other thing they may do is really compare themselves to others a lot, whether it's in looks or achievements. Those are all kind of hallmarks of lack of confidence.
Lack of confidence might also constitute someone's lack of self-esteem. Yes, do you think they're related?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are some people that see that they're the same thing. I define confidence as the belief that you can generally achieve what you set out to do. Not always, but generally.
In order to have confidence, one has to be somewhat courageous. Yes, would you link courage with confidence?
Oh, absolutely. Because courage is taking action. You have to be willing to act. If you have courage, you need courage to be willing to act. And confidence is all about acting. It's all about doing. It's about whether it's getting behind the wheel of your truck on your car on a busy highway, whether it's asking for a raise, whether it's saying to your spouse, "No, I don't want to stream another episode of this. I want to go and exercise." So all of those things, taking action, may require courage.
Yes, and confidence also is the ability to find your own voice.
Exactly.
To express yourself and your opinions and not worry about what anybody else is going to say about those opinions.
That's what I'd expect, exactly what I'd expect from a pushy broad from the Bronx.
Very straightforward, no BS, always, always. And that's why I was so attracted to this book, because I have never lost my confidence. I may wane a little bit, but I always like to hear someone that is moving forward and giving somebody a positive way to embrace their own self. And the reason why I wanted you here is because we do very similar work in terms of allowing people to have their own voice no matter what, to stand up for who they are and damn the torpedoes. Forget about everybody else. I never cared what anybody else thought, which is why I have embraced the term pushy broad from the Bronx, because that's who I am. So there you go. That's who I am. So I want to talk to you about what people can do to feel more confident, especially now during what we're facing in terms of, you know, being in isolation with COVID-19 and people really feeling isolated and afraid and nervous. What kind of advice, based on your book, would you give to someone during this time to bolster their confidence and their courage?
That's a very important question. And I think courage and resilience are exactly what we need now. And if you can muster those, then you'll feel more confident. In order to do those, I'd have a couple of suggestions. One of them is, hopefully each of us have a place where either currently we can feel safe, where we can cry and let all of our emotions out. Or if we don't have that right now, where we're locked away, maybe we can remember a place where we used to feel that way. If you can remember that, have that place in your mind, picture it. Think about what you see, what you hear, what you smell. How does it feel? Is there a breeze? Is there sunshine? And think about that place as your refuge. If you can picture your refuge when you're feeling frightened, take yourself in your mind to your place of refuge. That will help give you courage. It will help you build resilience. And the other thing, I mean, there are several physical exercises that I could describe. One of them is simply to stand up with both feet on the ground, you know, have your shoulders over your hips and visualize your feet growing roots into the ground. Think about standing like a tree. And if you can stand tall, and if you're sitting, sit tall, your brain gets the message, everything is okay. Everything is okay. And that's one way to start to the process of feeling that's everything okay. Let your body kind of trick you into believing that everything is okay.
Fantastic. So that is a question of working with your mind and your body to elevate your spirit.
Exactly.
Which is really, really wonderful. One of the techniques that I use with my clients as well, when you say to yourself, remember a time, and you visualize a time that is safe for you or a place that is safe for you, that's also a hypnosis technique, because I do a lot of work in hypnosis to anchor yourself to a place that you feel comfortable, your safe place. Or one of the other ways is to imagine a time that was difficult for you and you got through it, right?
Yes,
reference in the past. Yes, what right. We call it a positive reference of overcoming a difficult time. See yourself overcoming it and say to yourself, I came through that. That gave me the power and the strength to overcome this. Positive reference. And those are very, very, very powerful references. That's a wonderful thing. I want you to also address how other people around you, how friends and acquaintances may help you feel more confident in a way that's not codependent, but in a way that may be helpful and supportive.
Well, one of the things that's a real important component of confidence is positive emotions. So whether those can be love, they can be humor, it can be pride. Barbara Fredrickson, who's a wonderful expert on positive emotions, she's a professor at University of North Carolina, she's got a list of 10 positive emotions. Now, being with friends can be a way to help generate positive emotions. So it can be amusement, it can be love, it can be pride. And even beyond positive emotions, friends can help us because they can give us a pat on the back. They can encourage us. And frankly, friends can sometimes tell us when we've gone wrong to say, well, it's, you know, I wonder why you're doing that. You know what? Tell me more about that. Can you say more? And those are the kind of things that our friends may say to us.
Yes. And of course, when we do that, we have to be open and willing to listen with an open mind and with an idea that we're not going to necessarily accept everything, but we will be open enough to hear it and then place good judgment around it. Yes, the danger sometimes is to think too much about what friends are saying and act on those feelings as opposed to our own feelings, right?
That's a very good point, exactly.
So that's a good thing. Okay, so according to your book, what three things can someone do to feel more confident today, right now, here and now?
All right. Well, you've heard one of them, which is sit tall and stand tall. So your brain is going to tell your body everything is going well. Another one is to make a list of your successes. So all of us have had different fields that we've operated and worked in and had accomplished in. Maybe the success is cleaning the paper jam from the printer. Maybe the success is opening a bottle of champagne. Maybe it's making a Halloween costume that your kid really loved. Or maybe your success is making partner at a big law firm or vice president at a corporation. But those are all your successes. And remember those. Sometimes it helps even to write them down. You know, if you're feeling low and you're feeling, I can't do anything right, get out a piece of paper and write down your successes. And actually, manually writing with a pen or a pencil on a piece of paper, that makes a deeper impression in our psyche than doing that at a keyboard. And that's a very important thing to do. And you gave a great example, which is remember your comebacks. That's how I describe it. What you're describing, you said you work with your clients on. Think about how you've succeeded in the past. If I can give you a fourth suggestion to feel confident, it would be to write down three things every day that you are good. They don't necessarily have to be things that you're grateful for, because gratefulness sometimes suggests being grateful to someone for something. So maybe the good thing is that the sun is out. Maybe the good thing is you looked out your window and you saw kids with Easter baskets on Sunday. Or the good thing may be, oh, your partner made you something good for dinner. But if you can, every day for 3 weeks, if you can write down three good things, again, write them down. You don't have to write out in any great detail. Usually after 3 weeks, that kind of gratitude practice helps build confidence. It tells you things are going well. There are good things in my life.
Those are very good ways to build confidence. There's no question. It's very, those are extremely good ideas. And I am also, like you, of the opinion of it becomes a cathartic experience when we expel it from our bodies to a piece of paper. Writing it down actually giving us, going from what's in our subconscious mind to our conscious mind and actually really writing it down. What I do sometimes with my clients is even to take it one step further, I want them to be able to read it out loud. So write it and then read it so that you can hear it other than what's in your head.
That's great.
Out from the universe. And so the universe gets to hear it, how wonderful you feel about things. And also you get to hear it in a voice that's other than what's in your subconscious. So yeah. I'm always a big believer in reading it out loud as well.
That's a great idea.
Okay. So some of the other things that you have said are very interesting as well. You talk about having a formula for reclaiming the unstoppable you. I want you to talk about that. Your formula for confidence and reclaiming your ability to be successful is intention plus repeated attention equals confidence. Explain that to us.
Well, intention is making the decision, having the desire, I want to be more confident. And you have to actually set that up in your brain, because that primes the neural pathways. You aren't just kind of wandering around randomly doing things. You're doing things with the intention that this will increase your confidence. And repeated attention means doing tasks or strategies. My book is loaded with strategies, and pick strategies. There are lots of areas that one could work on to build confidence. But set your attention. Say, I am going to build my confidence by being more assertive. Look at the chapter on assertiveness and do some of those exercises. And that's the repeated attention. So you have the intention, okay, I'm going to be more confident. I'm going to do it by being more assertive. And then if you repeat doing those exercises, that will help you achieve it. That's based on principles of neuroplasticity, which I'm sure you're familiar with.
Yes,
that you can.
Let's talk about that. Let's talk about neuroplasticity and how it plays a very big role in your book.
It's a concept that I love. Now, it may be that I love that concept because I'm getting older and I love the idea that, it isn't the end of the day for my brain. There's still options out there. So neuroplasticity is a concept that came up probably, 1970, 1980,
yes,
with Dr. Donald Hebe, I think, was a Canadian neurologist. And he figured out that, he said, neurons that wire together, that fire together, wire together. So you can start to change the pathways in your brain if you get one neuron firing, the neuron, which are the nerve cells in your brain, will also fire. And what we have to be careful of is that we can create positive neuropathways or we can create negative neuropathways. So it could be if you look in the mirror and you say, oh God, I look at all these lines and wrinkles. And you say that every time you look in the mirror, well, you will have created a negative neuropathway.
Right.
And it's going to begin to operate automatically. But with repeated attention, you can create a negative or positive neuropathway. And so if we can find a way to have a positive neuropathway and we keep doing it again and again, then you're going to begin to turn that neuropathway around, so to speak. It will become a positive neuropathway. You may look in the mirror and say, wow, I have beautiful eyes, or I have lovely hair. Or you may look in the mirror and say, I'm a really strong person. I'm really proud of how strong I am. So looking in the mirror doesn't always have to focus on the reflection that you see, but what's there in your mind.
And that's a wonderful thing. I spent most of my career talking to clients about reframing your brain. We change the way we think in order to change the way we feel, which consequently means we change the way we act. Cognitive change breeds emotional change, which breeds behavioral change. So
yes.
Feelings are determined easily by what thoughts we put into our brains. Our feelings can change based on how our brain changes. And it's extremely hopeful to all of us that we can certainly change our brain first and then everything else will follow. So I am a big believer in cognitive breeds emotional breeds behavioral change. So that's something that I've been using forever and ever and ever. And I'm really glad that you are the kind of coach that does the same thing, because that's how we move forward. And also how we begin to form habits, because of the neuropathways and the fact that the repetition of that creates that neuropathway, which creates a mental habit for us so that it becomes automatic over time. And that's great when it's a positive resource. And of course, not so great when it becomes a negative resource. And that's why I work with people that are also suffering from addiction, alcohol, and drug, because those neuropathways are creating negative habits inside of us. So that's a really big thing. So continuing on, in some of the parts of your book, you have talked about three things that were essential for you in how you have moved forward, and the neuroplasticity is one of those things. And I know you mentioned something about meditation as well. That was also important to you, correct?
Yes.
Yes. Explain a little bit more about how often you do it and what you get out of it.
Well, let me say that I'm not talking about transcendental meditation, although I think that can be effective for some people. But what I found is mindfulness meditation, which is being in the moment, being aware of what's going on in the moment, is something I do every day. I've done for 5 years. And I think it's very important for the approach to confidence that I've laid out is you have to be aware of what you're doing. So in the example of looking in the mirror, well, until you start to hear that voice in your head, you start to hear the inner critic getting on your case. It's the awareness that's very important, and that it lets you start to change the emotion, change the behavior.
Absolutely, without question. It's awareness, verbalization, process, and move forward. But sometimes we have difficulty with that. Sometimes it doesn't always go our way. And sometimes we are compromised by the outside world. Sometimes people have trouble just concentrating on themselves, because they continuously shift focus by concentrating on the obligations that they have to others,
which sometimes pulls us away from building our confidence or being able to stand in our own truth and our own voice, because we're being pulled in different directions. How is it easier? Can you give us some ways with people who struggle with saying no and they're not able to devote their attention enough to themselves because they're being pulled apart in different directions?
Yes, sir. I mean, I think there are ways to phrase how you say no that will make it easier for you to say it, and because you think it's going to be easier for the listener to hear it. So, for example, it could be if you could invoke your values. It's like, oh, I would really love to help you right now, but if I do that, I won't be honoring my commitment to my family or to my work or to what the other things. So there it's no with the values. Then it's no with an offer of help. Well, I love it that you thought of me and I'd really love to help you, but I'm unable to participate. How can I help you find someone else? So no, but I'm going to help you. No, with appreciation. You know, like, oh, that's a terrific idea. It's wonderful, but I'm not able to participate. So again, you're softening it. You're lifting up the other person who hears it.
That's a good thing. That's some of the things that I hadn't thought of. Always I tell my clients when it comes to no, you don't have to necessarily say the words no, but sometimes you can say, I will get back to you. Or it's not right for me at this moment, but I'll have to get back to you. Or that's not going to work for me at this time.
That's right.
Right. So, because sometimes people have a lot of problems saying no. The pushy broad from the Bronx doesn't have any problems saying no. but lots of her clients do. And it's extremely understandable because we don't want to be rejected, because that does go straight to self-confidence. If I say no, then somebody won't like me. And if you don't have enough confidence to begin with, you don't want to get into that space of somebody doesn't like me because I'm saying no to them. You know, confidence can't be built on everybody else's liking you. That's not what it's about. You're saying yes does not necessarily instill your own self-confidence. It's a very subjective thing. So can you tell us, let's take some more examples in your book and talk about the third thing. You talked about neuroplasticity. You talked about meditation. And what's the third thing that was really important to you?
Wellness.
Yes, let's talk about that.
Sure, because this confident mindset is going to be working inside a body. And how can our body support that decision to be confident, those occasions where we put repeated action on the behavior? So we have intention plus repeated attention. And then, well, what happens in the body? And as you know, I'm sure from your experience and your client base, that what we put in our body makes a huge difference. Food can affect our serotonin levels. It can affect our wake and sleep cycles. So getting enough sleep, getting the right fuel, and I'm a great believer in getting the right exercise, because exercise releases endorphins. If we can pick kind of exercise that we like, and not pick exercise that we expect to excel in. You're not trying to set a record at the 10K or any other type of competitive sport, but go out, try an exercise, keep trying it again and again. You'll start building up the endorphins. And if you get better at it, you'll build up a sense of mastery. And that in itself fuels confidence.
Yes, the endorphins start to really kick in and you're feeling better about you. Sometimes it takes us feeling better about ourselves on the outside to begin to feel better about ourselves on the inside, right?
That's a great point.
It's a process. Yeah. And not only that, but not only wellness in terms of exercise, but I'm sure other things as well, nutrition, right? How we eat, what we put into our bodies, how right. we take of ourselves, if we're taking vitamins, you know, to do that, whatever we do, going for regular checkups, not neglecting our health at all, going to the dentist, going to the doctor, maintaining our general well-being, correct?
Well, and getting enough sleep. Sleep has now been increasingly recognized as important. And if you think about it, if you're sleepy and sleep deprived, it's even worse than being sleepy. But if you're sleep deprived and you're trying to function, you're not going to be hitting on all the cylinders.
No, you're not. And it's especially important during this time that we are in quarantine, and we are certainly going to be here for the month of April. We don't know how much longer it's going to be, but certainly the whole country is going to be here until the end of this month. And whatever that means, we have to discipline ourselves to keep to a schedule that is helpful for us, mind, body, and spirit. And to keep up our spirits, in order to do that, we have to stick to a schedule of eating and wellness and a structure in our lives that will help us when we come out of this, right?
That's an excellent point. Right? Exactly.
Because that's going to be some of it. It's not only how we're dealing with things as we're isolating or as we're coming in, we're sheltering at home, but how are we changing when we emerge?
What would it be like then? That's right. Well, I think that's a wonderful idea for people to set up a schedule now if they didn't have it before, and they have practices that help nourish them now, like good nutrition, exercise to the extent you can. Maybe that just means going out for a walk. But any type of exercise, I think, is really beneficial. And if you can find a way to do it on schedule, then your body will come to anticipate it, and it will be quite happy that you've honored that.
I think so, too. And I think one of the things that we can do during quarantine is pick up Kate McInnes's book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found, How to Reclaim the Unstoppable You. It is available digitally and in print wherever books are sold, specifically Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all of those great places. And now that you have a chance to spend some time reading something that will really help you, please pick up Kate McInnes's book. Kate, is there something that you'd like to tell our listeners, something you'd like to leave with them that they can take with you about the book or about yourself?
Well, what I would tell your listeners is that if they go to my website, which is katemcginnis.com, they can get 10 tips to authentic confidence, and that they may find that very helpful. And I would say that the first listener who sends me an email to kate@katemcginnis.com, I will arrange to have Amazon send them a print copy of the book.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. So if you want to be the first person that responds and gets a free copy of Kate's book, tell them again how to do that.
kate@katemcginnis.com. And I should say, McGinnis is spelled like Guinness Book of Records or Guinness Stout. You just slap an MC on the front of it.
Okay, terrific. Kate, we're so thrilled to have you here today. You certainly are an inspiration. We are certainly of like mind. I'm thrilled. I was very, very eager to see your book, and I really got some great things out of it. I do think we're on the same page. Really take a look at Kate McInnes's book, Confidence Lost, Confidence Found, and begin to reclaim the unstoppable you. Kate, it's been a pleasure to have you on our show, and I'll invite you to come back again.
Thank you. I truly enjoyed it.
All righty. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This is Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, saying thanks for listening. And remember, everybody needs a little push.
From the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, New York.
The Pushy Broad from the Bronx would like to thank her production team: songwriter, composer, musician, and soundman Sam Goche, voice artist and announcer Taylor Goche. Oh, that's me! And thanks to collaborative writer and assistant production manager Richard Torres, virtual assistant and social media guru Kimberly Studdard. Special thanks to Laura Kravitz, production manager, and Susan Herman, collaborative writer. And a very special thanks to Love Love Studios in Brooklyn, for recording and mixing our music.
Here is disclaimer information that we are required to produce.
Professional coaches provide an ongoing partnership designed to help clients produce fulfilling results in their personal and professional lives. Coaches help people improve their performances and enhance the quality of their lives. Coaching services received from certified life coach Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, are not offered as a substitute for professional mental health care or medical care, and are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure any mental health or medical conditions. The Pushy Broad from the Bronx is not acting as a mental health counselor or a medical professional. All comments and ideas offered by Ellen Stewart, the Pushy Broad from the Bronx, are solely for the purpose of aiding her audience in achieving their goals, and hopefully keep you smiling in the process.